Hello and welcome to Verbatim. I'm Jane Connors. This week, it being the first program of a new month, we're beginning a new series on memories from childhood. And we're starting today with an Irish Catholic girlhood from a woman who grew up in a model town. Margaret Gleeson was born on Labor Day in 1945, and she grew up in Daceyville, which is a very particular suburb in Sydney's east. Daceyville was founded in 1912 on a Labor Party dream, a dream of a garden city where there'd be open spaces, civic facilities, fair rents, and security of tenure for the working man and his family. This concept was based on Britain's Garden City movement. The regular grid pattern of streets we were all used to would be replaced by a design where homes, gardens, and public spaces would be combined in a radical curvilinear layout. It was hoped that this would encourage social interaction between public housing tenants and pride in their homes. Former soldiers like Margaret's dad were especially valued tenants, and the Gleesons took possession of their solid Federation home in 1935, adding their weight to Daceyville's Irish Catholic majority. By the time Margaret was growing up through the 1950s, Daceyville was a thriving community. She's talking here to Siobhan McHugh.
My parents moved to Daceyville in 1935 when my mother was pregnant with my oldest brother, and my father was a much older man. He'd been a First World War veteran, or was a First World War veteran, and my understanding was that tenancies could be handed down to the next generation, so that it was a village-like community, I suppose, though you don't know that's what it is when you're growing up in it, in that you knew everyone. As a kid, you're in and out of everyone's house. It was modelled on the English workers' garden suburbs. So it had, it was all, nice little dinky Federation houses, very small but nice and solid. And with the sort of included in it, there was a community hall, and there was a little string of shops. And in the shops, I think there was the rent office, the baby health clinic, the police station next door, all of those, so it made it sort of village-like, I suppose.
Now, on Bandstand, it's dance time.
I lived in Bunurong Road, but there were two, like at the edge of each block, there were two crescents, so that made it like a horseshoe. Those crescents went around to the next cross street, so there were two horseshoes with a sort of a hollow little park, or it wasn't a park, a little bit of grass in the middle, so that it was like a donut that was cut in half, and that used to be... That provided the boundary for gang wars and that when we were kids, you wouldn't play with the kids on the other side of the horseshoe.
And the streets were named in a...
Oh, yeah, well, all the boulevardy sort of streets, the long streets, were to do with the First Fleet or Cook... No, it was a Cook's. So there was Isaac Smith Street, Astrolabe Road. Astrolabe was a ship. Boussel was a ship. Cook Avenue. So that must have been to do with Cook, yeah. Isaac Smith Street, he was Cook's petty officer. And then the crescents were VC winners. So there was Colonel Braun, Sergeant Larkin, Corporal Jacker. I think they're all VC winners. It had a life of its own, like it had, an SP bookie, a prostitute, although she, by the time I was growing up, she wasn't a prostitute, but during the war, she operated a brothel from her home, which, I think quite a few of them did. They went away. We were one of two houses in our part of Daceyville that had a telephone. So everyone used to use our phone from about 4:30 of an afternoon, there'd be continual phone calls, which, you know, we'd it on our phone from different men had got overtime that night, they'd ring up us to send around a message to the wife saying, you know, they were working overtime, you know, that sort of stuff. So there was a pooling of those sort of resources that now everyone has. There was another neighbour who had a car. No one else had a car. So if it was an emergency, you know, you went down to Lester's, you know, to if your dog got run over and you had to go to the vet, you know, you'd go down and ask Mr. Lester, could he drive you to the vet? And then when television came out, of course, you know, there was one person with a television. Actually, the first person who got television was they were a bit snotty of that family, and they didn't have an aerial that anyone could see, so no one knew. But then someone else got a television. Everyone went to their place.
You got to stop, look and listen, or you'll never know what you've been missing. You'll find the stars of variety in radio. We'll all come on to your house via video when they're at home. By the fire, it won't be hard to realize your heart's desire for the greatest sight you've ever seen. Spend a night by a television screen. Yes.
Well, my dad worked on the wharves. Before that, he'd been in the printing office. There were some seasonal workers who were shearers, and were away and came back. Some worked at the powerhouse at Bunurong. Another one worked at the airport, working on the council. Well, you know, garbage men. The leading lights in the parish were the bookmakers and underworld figures, you know, who weren't into nasty stuff. Like, they weren't into, you know, prostitution and stuff like that. They actually just ran illegal gambling, and that was okay because, you know, that's what built the school and the church and every illegal gambling, because we used to have illegal gambling every Friday night run by the, you know, the local bookmaker who was a pillar of the church. And Labor politicians too. All of these people were the people you looked up to. But I can remember this bookmaker, you know, I mean, he was a very good man, you know, he ran everything and lived in a beautiful big house, and, you know, not in Daisyville, obviously, but in Kensington. And, you know, they were the rich people and they were the leaders. And I never forget this, having this in a group talking, and this North Shore, you know, woman with a plum in her mouth, they were gossiping about someone. And in a very derisive way, you know, commented that this so-and-so, oh, she behaves like a bookmaker's daughter. And that was a put-down. And that really surprised me, because I would have thought, you know, I'd thought, gee, you know, they don't think bookmakers are a very big deal.
Barefoot boy, sitting by the roadside, barefoot boy, when you say hello, with eyes that smile and lips that wink of laughter, barefoot boy, I love you so, barefoot boy, I love you, love you.
A lot of the tenants actually, I mean, they were there for their life, so they did all sorts of things to their houses. I mean, we glassed in the front veranda, put on a back porch, built a laundry downstairs, built a shed, big greenhouse or bush house for my mum, and that was normal. I mean, the man down the corner, they had a huge solarium type thing, but it was huge, and he'd made it out of big rocks and pebbles and glass, and it was all fish tanks. And he had a big fish, he bred goldfish and carp and stuff. So there was a huge, you know, monstrous structure, which as a kid I just thought was paradise. It was like an aquarium, a huge big walk-in aquarium. It was cool, very cool, and, you know, it was like a garden house. They'd built that, you know, everyone added on and did all sorts of things that they knew was illegal. And I can't ever remember inspections or anything like that, but there was always this, perhaps not so in the early days, but later, you know, when I was a teenager, that you might get into trouble. You know, it's because I can remember Dad had taken out, there was a doorway between my bedroom and the back veranda, which was my brother's bedroom, and Dad had taken the door out and put in a two-way bookcase. So he'd go through my bedroom to get out instead of going through the kitchen, and, you know, I used to get the shits about that. And, you know, when I was 12, my father decided I needed privacy. Plus, we needed somewhere for our books, so he put in this two-sided bookcase. But he was always worried. He'd made this change. I mean, forgetting the shed, the garage, the front veranda, all of these other structures. And then when I was a year before I left home, was the last time they did any major maintenance in the place, and they painted all of Daceyville, outside and inside. It hadn't happened in years. In the middle of my final exams at uni, it was wonderful. Mm. You can imagine painters for 3 weeks. And actually, this was an interesting... I like this story. It's an interesting thing about, I suppose, how often racism is based on ignorance and lack of contact. The group that got the contract for this painting, they were Greeks. And Kensington and Kingsford had become becoming more and more Greek. There was a big Greek church, and you'd often hear, you know, these widow, you know, the old lady neighbours who were, you know, sort of English, Irish or Australian, you know, background, and with all of those sort of working class, you know, resentments of Europeans and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And, you know, the English ham and beef shop was now a Greek delicatessen, you couldn't buy this, and, you know, and you had to speak Greek to go to the chemist, all that sort of rubbish shit that you would get. Anyway, these Greek fellas came, and they couldn't speak much English. The boss was Romanian, he could speak English. But they just won these little old ladies, and you had all of the, because they were lonely, you know, and often didn't have visitors, some of them. And so here were these people, and they were having to make morning tea. The young Greeks have a great old time. They were going from morning tea to morning tea and from afternoon tea to afternoon tea. Every house would be wanting to feed them. And in the end, the boss had to sort of go around to all the women and said, look, I'll give you a turn. So morning tea, you can do morning tea on Monday, you can do it on Tuesday. And by the end of the time, you know, everyone was, you know, they were sort of talking to these people. And my family were fairly political, and there was a federal election on. This is a 66 federal election, and because we lived on the main road, we'd always, and my parents were in the Labor Party, there'd always been a big sign, you know, vote for whoever, you know, in the front thing. So that prompted a lot of questions from these Greeks. And this was the time of the coup, or after the coup, during the military dictatorship in Greece, and a lot of these people had fled from that. And so that they started talking, you know, politics to my mother. I remember I came home from uni one day, and she said, and she'd been, you know, just like everyone else, complaining about being taken over by Greeks, you know, and all the shops were Greek and everything. And she said, you know, they're very left-wing, these Greeks. They're really good people. And do you know what's happening in Greece? And she was telling me all about the dictatorship, and, you know, I reckon they're good socialists, you know, and all. So after that, all Greeks were socialists, as far as my mother was concerned. even the rotten bloke that was ripping us off at the, you know, corner shop.
Have you been teasing all the while? Would it be wrong to love you? You know how much I care.
What was the sort of feel, what were the political attitudes of people in Daceyville, including your family?
Oh, well, it was mostly, you know, traditional ALP. I can remember, and my parents, you know, were, you know, in the Labor Party. Oh, just about everyone was in the Labor Party. I worked, my first election would have been the 1949 election, so I was three and a bit.
What did you do then?
Well, my mother made a special little dress for me in Labor Party colours, and my dad painted my toy table and chairs in Labor Party colours. And then, you know, they set up the tables outside for handing out the how to votes, and he, you know, my brother and I decorated my, you know, so we had a little toy version. And of course, everyone was coming up to us because we were so cute. but the point is that, you know, you knew everyone, and you knew the three people who didn't vote Labor. You know, one was a communist, and then there was a liberal and a DLP.
And what was the Liberal doing in Daceyville?
Good question.
Did they get vilified?
Trader. Oh, yeah, everyone thought he was up himself, you know, because he wore a... I can remember this bloke. He wore a sort of a tweed jacket and one of those little, you know, are they trilbies, those little hats with a little feather in it, and he had a dachshund dog. Classic, you know.
He thought he was a country squire.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, having a dachshund dog, you know, when we all had fox terriers, you know, or my dad bred Irish terriers, or we had an Irish terrier, you know, and this guy had a dachshund, you know.
Well, tell me about that whole Irish Catholic background to your family and that sort of tribal aspect of Daceyville.
Well, there was a Catholic church in Daceyville and a primary school, a convent school. When you think of growing up in the 50s, I wouldn't have had an education if it wasn't for the Catholic school system. The big school building program and the Renaissance in education in New South Wales was in the late 50s and into the 60s. I would have missed out on that. I went to OLSH Kensington. That also had an alternative, what they call an alternative curriculum, which was, you know...
Is that Our Lady of the Sacred Heart?
Yeah, yeah. And they had a very academic orientation. Well, yes and no. They prided themselves. Yeah, we had photos of old girls who, you know, one who was the youngest person ever to get a medical degree and was a fellow of the Royal College of Surgeons in Edinburgh and all this sort of stuff. And we had a showpiece laboratory, but it was chemistry. They didn't do physics because that was considered unfeminine. I was really good at maths 1 and 2, but after the intermediate, they didn't have those options because maths was considered unfeminine, so I did general maths. Even though I didn't want to, but I mean, but still, you know, I got to university.
But how come your parents, I mean, in those days, a lot of men especially, but women too, often felt that there was no need for a girl to get an education because after all she'd only go and get married. I mean, how come they had those aspirations for you to have an education?
Oh, I think it's part of the social climbing, you know. You want your children to do better than you. You want to live through them, you know, because my father wanted to be educated and wasn't educated, you know, only went to 14 or whatever, but thirsted for it. But I can remember sort of my parents sort of saying, oh, you know, it's better to put your money into your children's education than it is to paying rates and maintenance, you know, for a house, as long as you've got a house to live in.
That's why I love her. Lover, well, I saw a pretty little girlie walking down the street. The kind of girlie that I'd like to meet. She held my hand and she was so fine. Tell me, darling, will you be mine? I know I love a dearie.
I went to New South Wales Uni, which was very close to home. Some of my friends, who are also Catholics, because that's, you know, you sort of mix well with Catholics initially because you're too scared not to. But they were from, you know, Kingsgrove, St George area. And I can remember her sort of commenting on how funny the houses were around here. It wasn't like a suburb. And I always thought it was a suburb. But it meant, you know, I mean, what she meant was the density. But then also, too, there were a lot of other people in the class were from the North Shore and, you know, dressed beautifully and spoke beautifully and, you know, all the rest. And I'd never had anything to do with them.
Now that girl and I are married, we're as happy as can be. I like her and she loves me.
Another case, I suppose, where I was confronted is I mean, I was doing very well in English, you know, in essays and all that sort of stuff, probably because we were doing stuff like James Joyce and that, and I really, Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man, I really identified with and found it very easy, and everyone was thinking how difficult it was, and so I was writing, scored brilliantly. And then we were doing phonetics, and you know, you have standard English, and standard there's this... a classification called Educated Australian, which approximates standard English. And then there's Broad Australian. And the tutor had written, well, just practising the script, the phonetic script, and he'd written some lines on the board in ordinary script and asked us to write it just to translate it into phonetic script. And then, you know, people wrote what it was, and I wrote different stuff. And I can remember the word was bay, and I wrote a diphthong, ay, the diphthong, for, and everyone else had written bay. And I thought I was writing it in standard English. Like, I'd used the right symbol, but it was wrong, because he said, no, in standard English, bay is written that way. And I'll never forget this woman who had this really, you know, toffee voice saying, oh, Mr. Cattell, I know what the problem is. Margaret, calling Margaret, Margaret is translating into broad Australian, not educated Australian, because she's a speaker of broad Australian, a native speaker. And he said, oh, right. So then I had to speak for people because, you know, I was, yeah, they discovered I was a native speaker of broad Australian.
But Dacey Villanelli went under the hammer in the early 1970s when the Department of Housing threatened radical redevelopment. The Builders Labourers Federation, as so often in Sydney in that era, came to the party with a green ban, and Daceyville's traditional adherence to parish pump politics sealed the deal. The suburb was eventually classified by the National Trust.
The Department of Housing was going to redevelop Daceyville. I think at one stage I can knock most of the houses, because they hadn't done any maintenance since 1966 when the Greeks came in. So this would have been, I suppose it was the late 70s, was it? When, yeah, it would have been the late 70s. So that's a long time. And they were going to turn them into maisonettes and house more people there. And everyone got, you know, upset about it. Because these were mostly very old people by that stage, and they were pretty scared about moving, of course, you know. And the department was trying to do all the right things, like taking them out to see where they would go and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But there was still a core that were really digging their heels in. So they approached the BLF, and the BLF put a green ban on. And then there was going to be a demo on the Sunday. And it just, I didn't know about it until I got home for the weekend, and Mum and Dad said, oh, you know, there's a demo on Sunday, just at the top of the street. And normally, you know, I'd go to Mass as late as possible. and Dad said, no, we've got to go to 8:30 Mass tomorrow because, you know, to fit in with the demo. So I said, oh, all right, Dad. So we went out to Mass. And the priest, when the sermon would begin, the priest sort of said, look, I won't have a sermon and I'll just rush through the rest. If you want to go to communion, do it later. I promised Mr. Bowen or Mr. Brereton, whoever it was, the local members, that I'd have yous all up there in time for the demo, for when the cameras come. So when the demo's over, if anyone wants to go to communion, come back and you can have communion. So everyone, you know, gets shunted up, you know, real rent a crowd. About 400 people from the church up to the demo.
Margaret Gleeson, who grew up in the Sydney suburb of Daceyville. You can read her story in Shelter from the Storm, a history of public housing tenants by Siobhan McHugh, which was published by the New South Wales Federation of Housing Associations. Our thanks to Margaret and Siobhan. Production on today's Verbatim was by Caitlin Marr, with technical production by Judy Rapley. Next week, a very moving story of a childhood spent in Belsen. I'm Jane Connors. See you then.
I said she's tough.
Oh!
Double defeated.
What was that?
A trust fall.
Oh!
Oh, say what?
Say what?
She's a dog.
Oh, Joe, no.
So tough.